At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
And she was a protester. And in this country, we don't shoot protesters.
When Babbitt was climbing over that barricade, it wasn't as a person who awkwardly found herself in a strange situation. It was part of this mob that was engaging in violence.
Are you serious? That's how this whole thing is going to be framed? What? Like, yeah, if you're at the point where she's, like, literally smashing the windows and trying to crawl in while a cop at gunpoint is like, do not enter, I have a gun pointed at you. You're not, like, you're not a peaceful protester on the outside. If you haven't already heard of Jose, Jose is, got to have one of the nicest, softest voices in the YouTubery. Here's a link to Jose's channel if you want to go give Jose a sub. Jose apparently has watched the entire Tucker Carlson Patriot Purge video and has some thoughts. I have not watched the entire Tucker Carlson Patriot Purge video, so I would like to learn about it and also learn about Tucker Carlson.
6th, 2021, an angry group of protesters stormed the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. during the certification process for the 2020 federal election. This violent attack was motivated by the belief that the election had been rigged to favor the winner, Joe Biden. Much like the 2020 election, the events of January 6th have also been the subject of similar theories, that the mainstream narrative of Trump supporters having stormed the Capitol in anger may be masking a deeper truth. Right-wing media has been quick to push this narrative, with Tucker Carlson being a focal point in his three-part special, Patriot Purge. Airing on the Fox Nation streaming service as part of the Tucker Carlson original series, Patriot Purge is a slickly produced program that features many interviews with people who were present at the Capitol on January 6th. Although it claims to reveal the truth of the events of that day, I want to look at how it supposedly does that and what the broader implications are. It's a long one, so let's get right into it. The series opens dramatically.
The domestic war on terror is here. It's coming after
white people?
Half of the country.
The immediate comparison we see is that Americans are being treated the same way as terrorists, with references to Guantanamo Bay and torture.
The Biden administration will confront this threat with the necessary resources and resolve.
One of the major through lines in the...
We were just talking about this, how there's like this weird Republican thing where they really want just like a crumb of oppression. Not real oppression. I think real oppression would have them just be objectively horrified and they would just be like, oh God, I don't want this. Holy fuck, let me go back to my regular life. But just like a sampling of oppression, a VR oppression simulator. Maybe if we could do that, right? Let's create a VR oppression simulator and let Republicans go in it a couple times a week. They can, you know, get off. And then afterwards, they won't keep like pretending as if there's a war on Christmas, for example.
This series tries to equate the overreaches of the government after September 11th in the name of the war on terror with supposed overreaches happening after January 6th. Tucker Carlson sums it up for us.
January 6th is being used as a pretext to strip millions of Americans, disfavored Americans, of their core constitutional rights and to defame them as domestic terrorists. But what exactly happened on January 6th? How much of what we were told about that day is a lie?
Which rights are being taken away? And outside of those who attacked the Capitol, who is being branded a terrorist? We never get answers to those questions. Instead, we plunge into the broader narrative about the supposed misinformation surrounding January 6th. The first person we meet is Darren Beatty of Revolver News.
One of the few in media who's done real reporting on what actually happened on January 6th.
He frames the mainstream media response to January 6th like this.
MAGA blood libel.
Beatty's evidence for this is the story of the death of Officer Brian Sicknick. Early news reports on and immediately following January 6th were that Sicknick had been killed after being beaten with a fire extinguisher.
There was no fire extinguisher involved at all.
This inaccuracy has, of course, long been corrected. Officer Sicknick had died of a stroke brought on by natural causes, according to his medical examiner. He had been attacked on January 6th, though. However, it was with some kind of chemical spray, not a fire extinguisher. Or maybe he wasn't attacked with any weapon, according to Revolver News.
Revolver News found the video shows no spray coming out of the container. It's a lie.
Based on reading the article from Revolver News about the subject, even though one of the suspects is holding a canister, Beatty doesn't think any spray is coming out, because he doesn't see it in a grainy cell phone video. Luckily, there are a few more videos that show another officer standing near Sicknick reacting in this moment as if something had been sprayed into her face. We can also see footage from Sicknick later on pouring water on his face, much in the same way his colleague had.
And even so, is this the smoking gun that Tucker was looking for all along? It's like, hey, if you do not see the spray, you must forgave. I don't know. I can't make that rhyme. Clearly, I'm not ready for my hip hop career. But yeah, that's absolutely ridiculous. Like, you know, the spray. There's no spray in this grainy cell phone footage. So clearly nothing happened. There was no insurrection.
There was a correction to this narrative that while the government had initially reported it being bear spray, it had actually been pepper spray. An updated story from CNN reflected that, and many other changes to this particular piece of news as more details became clear. Around chaotic news events, this is fairly common. Details about stories unfold, and sometimes the media can get things wrong. And in this particular case, it was the prosecution against the men who sprayed Sicknick who had to amend their statement on what spray was used. It also isn't...
Let's see. Okay, thank you. I was like, what is Revolver? I don't think I've used it as a source before, but maybe this is why. Revolver News, a right-wing website endorsed by Trump, calls for shooting protesters. On Wednesday, the right-wing news aggregator website Revolver.News published an exclusive article calling for law enforcement officials to open fire on protesters in Louisville and elsewhere. While many right-wing media outlets and commentators have echoed calls for law and order, what makes the Revolver article of interest is the name of one of its biggest promoters, President Trump. The article by Revolver, published on Wednesday, was written in response to the violent protests in Louisville following the Breonna Taylor grand jury announcement. The article, which starts off by saying, "It's time to consider the unthinkable," calls on Kentucky officials to use deadly force to quell the unrest. The Department of Justice and local police forces could take some inspiration from the words of President Trump. When the looting starts, the shooting starts. If violent riots break out in Louisville in the days to come, authorities have a moral duty to stop those riots with force, including deadly force if necessary. The article goes on to discuss Breonna Taylor's grand jury announcement and aftermath, interspersing social media posts amongst the commentary. The article then concludes with a provocative call to arms against what it refers to as evil behavior of Black Lives Matter and other protesters. "The principal concern of our society is to uphold and defend law-abiding citizens, families, and communities. But that will only happen if we refuse to accept or coddle evil behavior. And we obliterate violent displays of Antifa and Black Lives Matter with heavy, righteous, and the hammer of law and order." He concludes, "Louisville set an example for the country in the days to come. If our nation wishes to stay happy, prosperous, safe, rioters must be crushed completely with the full weight of American justice system. Our civilization will only ever be as strong as our will and resolve to defend it. Let the shooting start." Wow. Aside from inflammatory content, Revolver is also notable of one of its apparent readers, President Trump. Early in September, the president seemingly endorsed Revolver in a tweet attacking other online website, The Drudge Report. "Our people have left Drudge. He is a confused mess. No clue what happens. Down 51% at Drudge. They like Revolver and others." Reference to "our people" is presumably a reference to his political supporters. The president did not offer any evidence to support his claim about Drudge's readership. I love that. I forgot about Trump's tweets where he could just be like, yeah, here's a number that I thought of off the top of my head. It's fact now because I'm the president, so it's out there. Fun. Quiet One 85, thank you for giving the sub to Steph's. I appreciate that.
In the case that Sicknick's experience of the riot had nothing to do with his stroke. Speaking to the Washington Post, medical examiner Francisco J. Diaz elaborated on his findings regarding what killed Sicknick. All that transpired played a role in his condition. The case of Officer Sicknick is difficult to grasp without some nuance. Though his stroke was not brought on by any physical injuries, the medical examiner believes that the events of January 6th played some kind of role in his condition when he suffered that stroke.
Okay, I said that. I remember defenders, and by defenders, I mean people like Glenn Greenwald, for example, who were coming out and saying that, like, you know, this whole thing has been a massive lie. It wasn't an insurrection. This was just like, you know, a small riot by a handful of bad actors. And at the end of the day, there wasn't actual real deaths attributed to it. The person who died, it was reported that they had died from having like a fire extinguisher to the face, but it turns out they died from a stroke afterwards. And I was like, yeah, but you can't tell me that you experienced January 6th firsthand as a police officer, and then the next day you died as a stroke, and that there's no relation to those two things, right? Like, I know people who have died from strokes because they got bad news, let alone being in something as traumatic as this.
Stroke, and it seems clear that he was sprayed with something in his eyes. But all of this nuance is completely ignored, so Beattie can instead frame this as some kind of orchestrated narrative to justify the term murderous mob.
They got the word deadly from this false reporting on Sicknick. It was a blood libel, and again, the national security state was operationalized on the basis of that narrative.
Well, the Officer Sicknick story is an interesting example of how breaking news is often filled with incomplete information and needs to be amended and corrected as time goes on. That isn't the same to say that some sort of plot is unfurling before us.
I'm sorry, why did he use the term blood libel? That is incredibly bizarre. Like, it's not something you can just attach to other things.
That every misreported fact is evidence of some kind of ulterior motive or agenda. It also seems strange that the media, who apparently helped orchestrate this plot, would then turn around and publish all the evidence required to undermine it. As for the term deadly mob, there might be some other evidence from that day that implies the mob might have had some lethal intent. This footage is not presented in the Tucker Carlson program. Considering that Mike Pence is still alive, though, perhaps attempted murderous mob is more accurate. But who exactly is this Darren Beattie guy anyway, and what is Revolver News? Their main page seems to be a collection of links to other outlets and Twitter threads supporting right-wing narratives. Their exclusive content reads less like investigations and instead builds on right-wing talking points with lots of flowery language. For example, here's how one article about the Sicknick case begins. The Brian Sicknick Saga, Why and How the Fallen U.S. Capitol Police Officer Died in the Aftermath of 1/6, has gone through many twists and turns. It has been nothing short of a masterclass in how our regime media lie after lie to launder fake narratives and avoid informing the public about
Rosie says, strokes are caused by blood clots moving from the body to the brain. A sudden rise in blood pressure, e.g. from adrenaline from being sprayed in the face, could easily move the blood clot into the brain, causing the stroke. Yes.
Basic important truths. Most of their articles read like this. Although there's no information on the staff at Revolver News on their website, it's safe to say that Darren Beattie, the website's founder, is responsible for the content on there in some capacity. Beattie started Revolver News sometime after his previous job, working as a speechwriter in the Trump administration. He was let go after it was revealed that in 2016 he spoke at a conference frequented by white nationalists such as Richard Spencer and
I recognized him from. Oh, it all comes full circle.
That may also explain his selective attitude toward protesters. Though Beattie roars like a lion to protect the rights and safety of Trump supporters who protested on January 6th, his Revolver News website took a different tone just a year ago, in September of 2020, when it published an article demanding that police prepare deadly force to use against protesters. Here's an excerpt. The principal concern of our society is to uphold and defend law-abiding citizens, families, and communities. That will only happen if we refuse to accept or coddle evil behavior, and we obliterate violent displays of Antifa and BLM with the heavy, righteous, and just hammer of law and order. We move on to Ali Alexander, one of the key organizers of the January 6th rally and the Stop the Steal movement.
Oh, no way. He's in this? I've said for a while, I think his days are numbered in terms of not spending any more of his life in prison. Like, I think he's one of the people who's been asked to testify recently, isn't he?
After 9/11,
This is the individual that you'll see all over the place with Alex Jones, usually in the days preceding the insurrection, with megaphones talking about how the election was stolen, all this other stuff.
My early adulthood, growing up in a post-9/11 world with an Arab name. And
oh, thank you. Let's see what the media bias fact check says. Revolver News is pretty close to extreme in their political affiliations, and they get mixed for factual reporting. Uh-oh. A questionable source exhibits one or more of the following: extreme bias, consistent promotion of propaganda conspiracies, poor or no sourcing to credible information, a complete lack of transparency, and or fake news. Fake news is the deliberate attempt to publish hoaxes and or disinformation for profit or influence. Sources listed in the questionable category may be very untrustworthy and should be fact-checked on a per-article basis. Please note sources on the list are not considered fake news unless specifically written in the reasoning section for the resources. Overall, we rate Revolver right bias and questionable based on poor sourcing, low credibility. well, nice.
And now, in this post 1/6 world, I'm on a list yet again because I've been deemed a minority in dissent.
This is an absurd claim in one very important way. Alexander is not simply a Trump supporter. He is an organizer for a rally that preceded a violent attack on the U.S. Capitol. However, Patriot Purge presents the Stop the Steal movement as unfairly maligned.
Stop the Steal was the most law-abiding movement that this country has seen in modern times.
Christ is king!
The claim that the 2020 federal election was stolen has not produced any results that would overturn the election. After multiple legal proceedings, audits, and outlandish claims, the results of the election have stood firm. The implication here is that the violence on January 6 had nothing to do with Stop the Steal. It also completely ignores the violence and threats by those who believe the 2020 election to be stolen. Here's a sample of what one Republican election official in Georgia, Gabriel Sterling, was faced with.
Joe DeGeneva today asked for Chris Krebs, a patriot who ran CISA, to be shot. A 20-something tech in Gwinnett County today has death threats and a noose put out saying he should be hung for treason because he was transferring a report on batches from an EMS to a county computer so he could read it. It has to stop.
While Alexander himself likely wasn't making or directing threats like these, he is absolutely pushing the falsehood of the election being stolen, and doing so to advance his own personal interests, regardless of the way it riles up those who are hearing the message. But to understand this, it would help to learn a bit more about Alexander, though. Alexander has been a Republican operative for quite a bit of time. An article by the Huffington Post describes his early days as a member of the Republican National Convention floor operations team and a contributor to a blog called Hip Hop Republican. That blog is, mercifully, no longer in operation. Alexander would have a number of odd jobs working for right-wing causes, meeting the likes of David Koch and Ted Cruz. He has cooperated with members of the Republican Party in a number of capacities. According to Alexander, the January 6th rally was another one of those projects. In a now-deleted video, he describes how the January 6th rally was planned in concert with Representatives Paul Gosar, Mo Brooks, and Andy Biggs.
I was the person who came up with the January 6th idea with Congressman Gosar, Congressman Mo Brooks, and then Congressman Andy Biggs. We four schemed up of putting maximum pressure on Congress while they were voting so that who we couldn't lobby, we could change the hearts and the minds of Republicans who were in that body, hearing our loud war from outside.
The congressmen have either offered no comment or claimed no connection to Alexander following the events of January 6th. Although strangely enough, the involvement of some unnamed members of Congress is confirmed in the Tucker Carlson doc, which played audio from Alexander from when he was organizing the rally.
And we have several members of Congress on this call and state legislators.
I consulted members of Congress. They felt like this would add pressure to make sure that our voices were counted.
Alexander also responds to accusations of him being a white nationalist.
I've been told that I'm a white nationalist. Me. I've been told that Stop the Steal was a movement of white supremacy.
The claims that Alexander is a white supremacist may have some basis in fact. He has a history with former members of the alt-right, such as Mike Cernovich. And there was this moment on a stream he co-hosted, immortalized by Media Matters, where we can see Alexander's guest holding up a particular flag popular in Germany in the 1940s. The full context of this video does show Alexander does not approve of the flag, but he and his co-host go to great lengths to portray this as a friendly discussion filled with jokes. It should also be mentioned that this guest was a participant of the white nationalist Charlottesville rally. If Alexander himself is not a white nationalist, he is, at the very least, on friendly speaking terms with a couple of them. Alexander also has a history of being concerned with who in the media is Jewish, and was quoted in an Observer article as having said, a number of Jewish people do hate crimes against their own communities to get press. Alexander has hyped his own propaganda skills, saying, Goebbels and Lenin, smart men, evil men, but they have nothing on me in terms of social engineering, which is a weird comparison to make. In Patriot Purge, Alexander presents himself as a peaceful organizer who had no intention of heading towards the Capitol building itself. Until a Trump...
Nothing disappears from the internet, hip-hop Republicans and the Wayback Machine. Oh no, oh no. Do we want to see this? Oh, my eyes! Hip-hop Republican, CNN film review, Jeremiah Terra, The Last Magnificent. That's kind of innocuous. Film review, Legion of Brothers. Film review, Living in Person. A film review, A Person to Person. CNN, Without Warning by Cleo E. Brown. Capitalism, White Supremacy, and Black Entrepreneurship. Despite capitalism's many blemishes and imperfections, it is the only system of economic development that has been proven power. Yeah. I mean, this just seems... It's a Manhattan-based blog that offers general news, original content, and covers politics, music. It seems like a lot of film reviews. Film review, film review, film review, film review. It's mostly a film review site.
staffer asked him to go there to calm things down.
A Trump campaign staffer walks up to me and says, you know, Ali, there are people leaving the overflow, and there are already tens of thousands of people at the U.S. Capitol. With your presence and the presence of Alex Jones, why aren't you guys...
Like I said, there's the two of them together. This is getting pretty close to that, that moment where Alex pulls out the megaphone and he's like, we're coming for you creatures. We're coming for all you creatures.
Walk down Pennsylvania.
Foreign creatures.
And yeah, that's right. He was hanging out with Alex Jones. Probably the last man I'd ever request to calm down anything. For example.
We're coming for creatures!
I'm not sure that's an effective way of calming down a situation. As the special clearly shows, though, Alexander was in full view and well aware of what was happening on January 6th, which makes some of his comments after the fact particularly interesting.
I don't disavow this. I do not denounce this. This is completely peaceful, looks like so far. And there-
Bad clip to have. I don't know even why you'd make this. maybe turn on a news channel. Just turn on one news channel before you make this statement and or recording.
There are a couple of agitators that I obviously don't endorse, but this is completely peaceful.
This tone seems more in line with other comments Alexander made prior to January 6th. At a rally on November 18th, 2020 in Atlanta, Alexander, who was once again alongside Alex Jones, was quoted as saying, who is going to be ready to storm the Capitol with us in a couple minutes? Jones added in, peacefully. And Alexander responded, peacefully, do not let Antifa infiltrate. It's wild to me that, in that case, it was Alex Jones who needed to be the voice of reason. Right up to January 5th, we have footage of Alexander at a rally saying,
victory or death! Victory or death! Victory or death!
Not exactly a peaceful rallying cry. What's perhaps most suspicious about Alexander, though, is his constant hustle to raise money. The Stop the Steal movement was a lucrative operation for him. Before he scrubbed as much of his own history off the internet as possible following January 6th, the Stop the Steal website was home to some very high-priced merch. You could buy a sticker, a t-shirt, or most
of... Whoa. Let's get back to this pricing.
His own history off the internet as possible following January 6th, the Stop the...
A $75 Trump 1 sign. $75. Holy shit. I mean, the $45 hat, I'm sorry, sports teams, you're charging about the same price. I'm not as disgusted by that. I mean, you want to buy a Canucks hat, it's going to be like $60. But that, whew, oh my, man, the grift is good.
The Steel website was home to some very high-priced merch.
Yeah, well,
a sticker, a t-shirt, or
I see people saying that it's not even designed that well. They pass the savings on to you. You see what they save on in hiring like graphics designers by doing it themselves, clearly in MS Paint, they then get to save. I mean, there's got to be savings cut somewhere, I'm assuming.
A yard sign for $75.
Yeah,
Alexander, who went missing following January 6th, has since been subpoenaed following his reappearance, which is a far cry from how Americans were imprisoned in Guantanamo Bay. The Alexander interview is Patriot Purge's attempt to reframe discussions about groups such as Stop the Steal, an organization backed by Republican politicians and operatives that purposely pushed a false narrative about election theft, all the while turning a blind eye, or gently encouraging, increasingly extreme behavior. History is being rewritten in this special to frame the obvious instigators of the January 6th attacks as victims, and it offers an alternative narrative of who is really responsible for the violence that day. In the next section, Elijah Schaefer of Glenn Beck's Blaze TV shows up to provide the most positive light possible for protesters.
Not Elijah Schaefer. God. Did you hear about the $500 channel advent calendar full of junk? No.
Footage of some very non-threatening people with commentary such as this.
We mean business.
January 6th was just, you know, mom and dad who were mad about what they saw to be an election that they thought was unfair, rigged, fortified, stolen. It doesn't matter what you say it is. They were just angry, and a lot of them just got caught up in the front lines of chaos.
And then there's this weird line.
They thought that rioting was like a game, maybe.
It's a very different tone than what Schaefer was saying on January 6th, although he deleted the tweet. At the time, he wrote, I am inside Nancy Pelosi's office with thousands of revolutionaries who have stormed the building. He explained his presence there and his phraseology in a future tweet. To clarify, I am not personally involved in the events today in D.C.
I was like, he pulled the reporter card, didn't he? And that's how he got away with the whole thing? I'm here. I'm a full-time reporter and regularly document chaotic domestic situations. Yeah. So Eliza Schaefer was technically a part of the whole thing, but then afterwards was like, oh, sorry, press. I was press. I'm just documenting it. I'm not a part of the insurrection in any way, shape, or form.
I'm a reporter and regularly document chaotic domestic situations to help inform Americans. The occupiers called themselves patriots and were chanting revolution, hence the choice of identifying words. How revolutionaries became mom and dad isn't entirely clear, and Schaefer tries to explain what he thinks happened on that day.
I happen to believe that a lot of the ways they treated rioters that were left-wing.
Kamala Harris was working to help the instigators, the criminals, get out of jail.
Giving the narrative that there's no consequences for acts of violence, even on federal grounds. Cases being dropped from the federal siege in Portland by leftist rioters. I believe that was part of sending a narrative to gaslight the right wing into thinking that they could riot too and get away with it.
Let's try to understand the chain of reasoning here.
Wow. I have not heard that one yet. So the reason January 6th happened had nothing to do with the president, QAnon, Michael Flynn, tons of people online, Roger Stone, Alex Jones, anyone fanning the flames, own saying the election was stolen, everyone pumping the idea the election was stolen consistently. Nothing to do with that. It was because the right was effectively gaslit into thinking rioting is okay because Antifa was getting off easy. That's basically the theory coming out here. The theory that Tucker Carlson is promoting, by the way.
The Black Lives Matter protests were apparently very lightly handled.
Yeah, it's a good no reverse guard if people buy it, I guess.
Politicians, and therefore people on the right thought that gave them permission to riot. First off, the BLM protests were not handled particularly lightly. Over 10,000 arrests were made by June of 2020. Second, support for BLM from...
Also, we should add that they were overwhelmingly peaceful. There's always this narrative because the media would hyper-focus on like little districts that would be on fire from rioters and looters and then be like, look at what's happening. This is like, you know, the Black Lives Matter protests. It's like, if you look at the sum total of the amount of people who were protesting across the United States, the fact that it came out to be about 93 to 94% completely peaceful, that's something that should be much more widely reported than what was being done at the time.
Mainstream politicians was often conditional on protests remaining peaceful. The reason you wouldn't see a Democratic politician at any of the protests where violence happened is because they don't endorse those. And third, perhaps most crucially, how can you possibly think that people who go to rallies with signs showing open hostility to Democratic politicians assume that those same politicians would protect them from facing consequences? In light of how nonsensical this theory is, I would suggest that Elijah Schaefer, as is often the case, has no clue what he's talking about. And he goes on.
The mainstream media pretended that they were not directly agitating the Capitol riots.
Following that baffling comment are a series of images of politicians and media figures offering support for BLM protests, interspersed with images of violence. The obvious visual sleight of hand here is to say that BLM protests were inherently violent, and to support Black Lives Matter means you must support all the violence that occurred during any protest, a standard that is certainly not applied to the January 6th rally. Oh, the montage does end on a very helpful clip.
Too many see the protests as the problem. No, the problem is what forced your fellow citizens to take to the streets.
The line cutting away to angry protesters chanting "Stop the steal" is, in a way, perfectly done. Although Cuomo was talking about the systemic violence targeting Black Americans leading to protests, the words could easily apply to Trump supporters angry about a stolen election. Only that stolen election is a lie, one that has been amplified and spread by right-wing media and elements of the Republican Party. So this special is more right than it knows when it shows us this. While it might be trying to present these angry people as legitimate in their concerns about the election, the truth is they were motivated by propaganda pieces like this very program generating outrage and eventually violence. Trying to spin this around on left-wing media and the BLM protests is stunning projection. Tucker puts a nice bow on it and then takes a step further.
The media and Democratic Party leaders created the environment that made the January 6th violence all but inevitable. But were there other agitators there that day?
Who those agitators were is answered by Tucker Carlson.
That is, again, a bafflingly weird thing to say. The media and, like, all those involved made it inevitable, as if, like, you know, this never would have happened had it not been for the media previous. Had nothing to do, perhaps, I don't know, with the president of the United States claiming the election itself was stolen, convincing his, like, army of followers that it was, in fact, a false election, that they needed to take the country back by force if necessary.
Person.
One of those agitators was a full-time left-wing activist called John Sullivan.
John Sullivan is the only agitator presented to us by name, which is strange considering hundreds of people have been charged. It becomes less strange when Sullivan is framed as a left-wing activist. Though Sullivan is claimed to be a part of Black Lives Matter in his home state of Utah, organizers in that state have no interest in him being a part of their group. Lex Scott, a founder of Black Lives Matter Utah, speaking to The New Yorker, said, "He's a thorn in our side. We learned to stay away from him long ago." Part of Sullivan's activism, which began in 2020, has involved reaching out to far-right groups such as the Proud Boys, a group that is never mentioned in Patriot Purge as one of the instigators of the riot. The New York Times produced a 40-minute video titled Day of Rage that documents the series of events of January 6th using videos and photographs taken that day. In great detail, it highlights the many aspects of the riot that were left out of the Tucker Carlson program. Aspects not mentioned include how groups such as the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys can be seen throughout the protests stirring people up and directing people towards the Capitol building. Day of Rage also helpfully identifies and shows footage of some of the earliest agitators in the crowd. Ryan Samsel, a Proud Boy, is identified as being the first person to attack a police officer, and other Proud Boys are also identified by name. None of these individuals are mentioned in the Tucker Carlson series, aside from Samsel, who is briefly mentioned in the third part as a victim of violence. Day of Rage also helpfully shows us how there were two waves of protesters who arrived at the Capitol building. The first wave, who violently tore through barricades, and a second wave, who arrived after Trump finished his speech. Patriot Purge does something very deceptive in this section.
It wasn't the police who kept the Trump supporters back.
Stop it!
Was Trump supporters keeping other people that were allegedly a part of their group back.
We are not that type of people! That is not us!
And that's when it just got weird. It got weird because things got peaceful, more peaceful, and people began to settle down. Police officers began to fire impact munitions down at the crowd. And it riled up the crowd, and then they started fighting and pushing forward. And I'm going, a situation that just got de-escalated, why would you want to escalate?
Contrary to Schaefer's speculation, the calm had less to do with Trump supporters deciding to mellow out, and more to do with police reinforcements arriving after the first wave and fortifying their barricades, barricades that would be overwhelmed when the second wave arrived. Let's take a look at this footage for a moment, with tear gas being fired into the crowd. This is presented as evidence that the police wanted to rile up protesters by firing into them. But this footage isn't during the brief calm period before the second wave, though. In the New York Times piece, we can see clearly that this was happening during the first wave of violence, before the calm period and the second wave. By changing the order in which this footage is shown, it creates the illusion that police were deliberately trying to anger the protesters into committing more acts of violence. To believe the Patriot Purge narrative, one would also have to believe that tear gas, which has been used on protesters for decades, has the exact opposite effect it's intended for. A more realistic interpretation of these events seems to be that the tear gas was used to slow the first wave of protesters down, but when the second wave arrived, the mob was emboldened to push forward. Tear gas can be seen used throughout the day and was ultimately one of the tools used by police and the National Guard to end the riot. Patriot Purge pushes forward a more convoluted story than the mainstream narrative of Trump supporters attacking the Capitol. Instead, we have Tucker Carlson giving us an alternative explanation.
Federal agencies have a long history of ensnaring American citizens in manufactured plots. It may sound like a conspiracy theory until you learn the undisputed details.
Darren Beatty follows up on this.
Oh, great.
You scarcely need now to revolver. Go back 3 months prior to the so-called Capitol Siege of 1-6 to an event that has now evaporated from memory and from the national consciousness. And that is the so-called Whitmer kidnapping plot.
The plot to kidnap Governor Whitmer is presented as being manufactured by the FBI. The problem is Tucker Carlson is lying about some of the details. For example, this line here.
12 of the 18 conspirators were either FBI informants or undercover FBI agents. In other words, fully two-thirds of the people plotting to kidnap the governor of Michigan were working directly for the feds.
Six men were charged with federal crimes, but an additional 8 men were charged with state crimes. The militia group responsible for the plot, the Wolverine Watchmen, originally only had one informant within it, a man going by the name Dan, who became an informant when he brought concerns of a plot to the FBI before April of 2020.
Okay, I wanted to wait to hear that, but I was like, my understanding of that was that they became an informant after the fact. I didn't know, like, multiple ones became informants, but I guess that's not true either. Tucker's just lying to you. But that's, like, that's a very duplicitous way of saying it, that they were FBI informants who were plotting this, and it's actually an inside job, conspiracy theory-style stuff, versus, yeah, after they flipped, they became informants, which it's something that's, you know, often happens.
The plan to kidnap the governor was hashed out in early June of 2020 that the FBI managed to have an additional 11 informants within this group. This isn't to say the FBI narrative should be taken as gospel, of course. The first informant, going by the name Dan, seemed to provide material support to help move along the process, providing a place for this militia group to conspire and offering to help provide tactical support for the kidnapping. It raises questions as to what sort of limitations the FBI places on its informants when it comes to participating in criminal acts. But this isn't quite the false flag narrative that Tucker Carlson is making out to be. BD offers some evidence for this conspiracy, though.
Many of the individuals involved in this plot have been associated with the very same militia group that the government has attempted to associate with 1-6.
As mentioned, the militia in question were the Wolverine Watchmen. The group itself wasn't involved with January 6th because most of its leadership had been arrested.
I'll give you the cherry on top.
Hello, I'm Stephen D'Antuono.
The head of the Detroit field office of the FBI, who presumably oversaw all of those agents who would have been actively involved in inciting the Michigan kidnapping plot. Subsequent to that, he was quietly and suspiciously promoted to a high position within the DC field office, where he now...
Okay, so just so everyone is clear about what's happening here, there's now going to be this narrative, and we're already seeing it pop up in the media, and Tucker Carlson is ramping it up to fucking 11, that there is a plot to frame white people as terrorists or to instigate and gaslight white people into committing acts of terrorism for the benefit of the Democrats and or the deep state.
Oversees the investigation into 1-6.
The promotion of D'Antuono wasn't quiet. It was announced publicly in October of 2020 and covered in local media. And the idea that this man somehow orchestrated a riot at the Capitol building within a few months is a degree of competency I'm not sure we can ascribe to him. This isn't the first time we've seen this theory of the FBI orchestrating January 6th, though, and Beatty's history on the subject is why he was likely included in this program to begin with. It was a story on his Revolver News website that helped popularize the idea that this was all a setup. In fact, Beatty's whole appearance in this program is just him regurgitating an article from June of 2021 on his website. Maybe this article argues the case a little better. Except no, it doesn't. But let's take a look anyway. The evidence in this article all hinges on the fact that, in some of the documents related to the Whitmer kidnapping, someone is referred to as an individual from Wisconsin. This was revealed to be an FBI informant named Steve Robeson. Beatty suggests that in the indictments for the January 6th riot, it could very well mean that anyone labeled Person 1 or Person 2, who are unindicted co-conspirators, could possibly be an FBI informant or agent. This is, of course, a big jump to make. In the Justice Department's manual, there are specific instructions on using these labels. The manual reads, "For purposes of indictment itself, it is sufficient, for example, to allege that the defendant conspired with another person or persons known. In any indictment where an allegation that the defendant conspired with another person or persons known is insufficient, some other generic reference should be used, such as Employee 1 or Company 2. The use of non-generic descriptors, like a person's actual initials, is usually an unnecessarily specific description and should not be used." These terms aren't used to mask FBI agents or informants. These are just generic references for anyone whose name may not be known or who has not been charged. In fact, these terms specifically should not be used to identify FBI agents or informants. Speaking to PolitiFact, Ira P. Robbins, a law and justice professor at American University who has studied and written about unindicted co-conspirators, said, "An undercover FBI informant or agent cannot be an unindicted co-conspirator. The elements of the crime of conspiracy include the specific intent to commit the target crime. The FBI informant or agent would not have that intent." So any individual who is referenced as an unindicted co-conspirator and uses a generic label, such as Person 1, would, according to standard practices of the FBI, never be an FBI informant or agent. The PolitiFact article also helpfully points out how there was one case where Donald Trump seemed to be identified as Individual One when his lawyer, Michael Cohen, was indicted. Aside from this theory being, on its face, completely ridiculous, there is a way to test it out. In the Revolver piece, one of the indictments for January 6th was for an individual named Thomas Caldwell, and the indictment included a supposedly suspicious person too. An investigation done by the Washington Post figured out who this person too was pretty easily. The documents referred to Caldwell taking a selfie with person too, images that can be found on his Facebook page. It turns out the person he was taking that selfie with was his wife, who at the time had not been charged. If she was working as an FBI informant, I'd have to say it was pretty cold-blooded of her to turn in her own husband. This article is an absolute labor to read, and it's filled with writing like this. We hope that one consequence of this seismic exposé will be a serious and prompt reform of the justice system to present such aggressive and politically motivated prosecutions on the part of the government. To be completely thorough, though, there is evidence that some number of FBI informants were present on that day and operating within groups such as the Proud Boys. An article from the New York Times describes how one informant provided less than stellar information and was considered by the FBI to be of little use. Another longer piece by the Washington Post details how informants within militia groups leading up to January 6th were sounding the alarm to government agencies such as the FBI, and that the lack of preparedness constituted an intelligence failure. It highlights the main difference between the attempted Whitmer kidnapping and the January 6th attack, in that the kidnapping was foiled and the attack wasn't. Towards the end of the first part of this program, Tucker Carlson says,
"Most Americans probably assume the chaos of January 6th was a result of intelligence failures or of simple government incompetence. But direct incitement by federal agents? The intentional entrapment of American citizens? No decent person wants to believe that. But increasingly, there's evidence it is true."
Except there is no evidence to support the idea that the FBI orchestrated this attack. If anything, the failure to prevent violence on January 6th reveals a lack of interest in the growing threat of militia groups such as these, in spite of repeated warnings in recent years. The FBI identified these early warning signs as aspirational rather than an actual plot to storm the Capitol building. The Washington Post piece describes how many warning flags were ignored. I share concerns that increased spending on...
Tucker is such a dangerous person. Like, he legit is someone who people need to worry about. I mean, it's also like, you know, you may have people like Glenn Greenwald who have been trying to really fool us all into thinking Tucker's not as bad as he actually is. And like, luckily there's enough people who push back on that on a regular basis. But like, it is just so baffling to me because at this point, Tucker Carlson, like, he's the biggest. He's the biggest late night news opinion piece on cable television. And yes, cable is like a dying medium for sure. Younger people aren't watching their news on Fox. Their median age skews 68 and older. Fine, but we're still talking about millions and millions of people who take what he says legitimately seriously. And like, here is him like actively spreading a false conspiracy theory
on beefing up police and the FBI is less necessary than taking the existing threat seriously. While I don't believe the FBI plotted this riot, I am certainly open to the idea that the violence
Shell's greenwashing project is on Twitch. Shitty.
Tucker Carlson is not an ally in this battle, though. The FBI false flag theory is a means to an end, and is deployed to deflect any sort of blame on the actual perpetrators of the January 6th riot, far-right Trump supporters, who were more than happy to take credit for the riot in the days that followed. That isn't to say every Trump supporter who was there supported those actions, but it is undeniable that those there who did commit violence had a very specific person they were supporting. The second and third part of Patriot Purge spends less time talking about why the January 6th riot happened and instead focuses on the faces of the people who were there. These personal stories escalate in a manner that gradually attempts to absolve participants at every level. The first two people we meet are Paul and Marilyn Hooper of Alaska. These humble spa owners attended one of the rallies on January 6th and sometime afterwards were visited by the FBI. In what appears to be a case of mistaken identity, the FBI believed Marilyn Hooper was the woman seen in a photograph taken within the Capitol during the riot. And while the couple did attend the rally, they claimed to have never entered the Capitol.
We were mentioning to some people like, "Hey, it looks like we missed the party." And they're like, "Oh no, you can go in. Just get in that line there. Follow those people. See, they're heading on in. They're just letting anybody who wants in." And I was like, that doesn't sound right.
The FBI's heavy approach is likely because the woman in the photograph was suspected to have stolen Nancy Pelosi's laptop, which may contain sensitive information. That said, it doesn't excuse how the FBI treated these two people. And this is as good a time as any to point out that not everyone who attended the rally that day participated in the riot. While they were certainly under the same mistaken impression that the election had been stolen, being wrong about something in public isn't the same as breaking into the Capitol building, a distinction this program pretends no one outside of conservative media is making. The Hoopers do come off as a bit strange, though. They're happy to play along with the narrative that this was some kind of staged event.
It felt totally like some kind of setup was being made.
Their instincts were right. It was a setup.
In addition to being featured in local media, the Hoopers have been proactive in their case of being aggressively questioned by the FBI, including setting up a website detailing their many media appearances. They seem to be marketing themselves as the face of the unfairly maligned masses, and part of that marketing apparently means propping up the theory that the January 6th riot was staged. This incident does remind me of another protest movement, one that was specifically about heavy-handed law enforcement that would, for example, kick in doors and put people in handcuffs on dubious information. But instead of finding some common cause against the excesses of law enforcement with a group such as Black Lives Matter, this is instead being spun as special discrimination against conservative Americans, a theme we'll be seeing a few times in the rest of the series. Tucker Carlson even sums it up for us.
It is a purge aimed at legacy Americans.
Of course, legacy Americans is just cool. A fancy way of saying white Americans.
Yeah.
Tucker Carlson
that's,
goes on to
that's a new one, though. I haven't heard that before. Legacy Americans. You know, there's the new Americans coming in from, you know, dubious countries. But then there's the legacy Americans. I guess that's going to be the American version of Keep Britain for the British, right?
Britain for the British. Yes, that's right. For the glory of the Queen, keep Britain strictly for the British. None of these vagabonds are going to come in and sully our purity.
Describe a concentrated effort to weed out people from American life on the basis of their political ideology.
Purge of inconvenient citizens who vote the wrong way. Nothing like this has ever taken place on American soil until now.
Not only is this not happening now, it actually has happened before. Throughout the 1940s and 50s, Senator Joseph McCarthy led the effort to root out those on the left who were supposedly socialists or communists as part of the Second Red Scare. Mm-hmm. A persecution that became synonymous with his name, McCarthyism. Carlson is obviously lying when he says political persecution by the U.S. government is new, and his evidence for it happening today is flimsy. Here's his first example. The next person we meet is former DEA agent Mark Ibrahim.
DEA agent Mark Ibrahim was forced from his job and later indicted simply because he was near the Capitol protests on January 6th.
This is another lie. Ibrahim had expressed his intention to resign from the DEA weeks before January, and he was not indicted for being near the protests, as Carlson claims. The actual indictment has four specific charges. The first is that Ibrahim gave a false statement regarding why Ibrahim was at the Capitol that day. First, I want to show you how Tucker presents Ibrahim's story.
Says he went to the Capitol that day because he was invited by an FBI informant, a man he had known in Iraq. We have confirmed this is true. We've reached out to that man, the man that Ibrahim went to the protest with. He denies he encouraged anyone to break the law, but that man did confirm that he has been an FBI informant. He confirmed the FBI knew he was at the Capitol that day.
Hey, basically Jesus won. Thank you. Thanks for the Bozos money.
The two relevant points are, one, Ibrahim was invited to the Capitol by his friend, and two, Ibrahim's friend has worked for the FBI. By stating it that way, it very much sounds as though Ibrahim was lured to the Capitol to do his duty assisting the government and instead trapped in a plot targeting Trump supporters.
Yeah.
These first two relevant points are corroborated by the statements Ibrahim gave to law enforcement, but they're missing an important detail. Reading from the criminal complaint, Ibrahim said he went along with his friend, who had been asked by the FBI to document the event, and that he went along with his friend to assist in that effort. The important part is where Ibrahim said that he had been asked to document the event as part of an assignment with the FBI. This, according to Ibrahim's friend, is completely untrue. Once more from the criminal complaint. Ibrahim's friend told your affiant that he was not there in any formal capacity for the FBI and that the FBI was not giving him directions or marching orders, the agent wrote in the affidavit. He said that Ibrahim crafted this story in an effort to cover his ass. According to Ibrahim's friend, Ibrahim went to the rally in order to promote himself. Ibrahim had been thinking about his next move after leaving the DEA and wanted the protests to be his stage for launching a Liberty Tavern political podcast and cigar brand, the affidavit said. Law enforcement would, of course, have record of any operations being run by the FBI documenting this event, but I found some more evidence from a less biased source, videos from Mark Ibrahim's YouTube page.
Just here at the steps of the Capitol, enjoying a nice Liberty Tavern cigar, and
Yeah. Apparently some guys got in.
Apparently.
Just chilling, enjoying a Liberty Tavern cigar. The steps of the Capitol.
Based on these videos, it certainly seems like Mark Ibrahim had gone to the Capitol not on official business, but to instead advertise these cigars. Two of the other charges in the indictment involve carrying a firearm on Capitol grounds and carrying a firearm in a restricted space. Here's another relevant excerpt regarding that. Ibrahim denied that he displayed or exposed his DEA badge and firearm at the Capitol. Specifically, Ibrahim stated, "I had my creds, I had my firearm, and my badge on me, but never exposed. Not that I know of." Here's a photograph from January 6th of Ibrahim posing with his badge and gun exposed. The last of the four charges is for stepping on a statue, which, fair enough, doesn't seem like that big a deal. The next person we meet is Emily Grace Rainey, formerly a captain in the U.S. Army, working in the PsyOps division, telling us how the mainstream media is brainwashing us.
Influence and psychological warfare are the most powerful forces on the planet. I have seen this happening in the mainstream media being used on American citizens, and I can reverse engineer exactly what they're doing.
Rainey presents herself as another victim of the media's slanders.
I went and I saw my commander in chief.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you.
At my nation's capital, took 100 of my friends, and they ostensibly ruined my career had I wanted to stay.
This, as you might have guessed, is not true. Rainey resigned from the Army in September of 2020, well before January 6th. This was after she had staged an anti-lockdown protest by bringing her child to a playground that had been shut down during the early stages of the COVID pandemic. Rainey did organize a group of people who attended the January 6th rally, though they don't seem to have entered the Capitol building. What Rainey takes exception to is a news article that described her group as some kind of militia.
It's just like so many falsifiable lies that I'm astounded. That, like, I guess people just don't care. Like, they'll just watch his propaganda piece. They'll be like, holy shit, I didn't know this, but the whole thing was a setup. The FBI planned January 6th. The whole thing is an inside job. Thanks, Tucker Carlson, number one cable news host in America.
Said that I led 100 militia to the Capitol with weapons and military equipment.
This actually doesn't come from American media, but rather was an article published by the New Zealand Herald and seems to originate from an Australian outlet. It's not an article about Rainey, who's only mentioned in passing either. It instead is about examining the psychological dynamics of the mob, hence that sloppy intro, which would have been better served mentioning the Proud Boys or some other violent group that had been present instead. Why the unspecified powers created this false narrative in an outlet from New Zealand that only passingly mentions Rainey isn't really explored or even mentioned. Instead, the sloppy article is presented as phase one about the supposedly false narratives of extremism within the military.
Started to see all of this stuff coming up about the veterans that were in the crowd.
The extremist elements within the military have been well documented, and even higher-ups in the military acknowledge this as a problem. In an analysis done by ABC News, at least 9% of those charged in the January 6th riots were veterans, which is disproportionate to the national population. And while Rainey claims that the label of extremism is nebulous, the program actually shows us some very specific example of what it means. And after having participated in the January 6th rally, we...
Puddle Dive says, tricky because the FBI doesn't trap people and orchestrate things to varying degrees to stay relevant. Like all the things right populism preach, there's an element of truth to it. But what isn't mentioned is this isn't new. Muslims especially have been targeted and exploited by the FBI for a long time, especially post 9/11, by the way. As soon as the Patriot Act was signed into power, the government had untold, unfathomable reach in terms of what they could do without having to be subject to due process, which is like... The idea that leftists have ever been on the side of this or that leftists were pro, like, Patriot Act is absurd. Like, people, I remember back then, like, the left screaming about the Patriot Act and the powers that it was going to give the Bush administration and how it was a bad idea. And that was post 9/11. That was after the entire world was fucking scared shitless about this kind of stuff. And like Jose is pointing out, like, none of that is new. The FBI, using its overreach to vilify and or target its own citizens, was at its peak in the McCarthy era during the Red Scare. I mean, back in those days, you were considered to be a patriot if you, like, sold out your neighbors, if you sold out your family, if you picked up a phone and, like, yeah, I feel like my neighbor might be a commie. See, he's got this red soda he drinks all the time, and I don't think it's very delicious, and I think he's only drinking
it because he loves the Kremlin or something there or there. So go get him, see? Go get him, Kapaz. That was enough. And then all of a sudden they would show up to his house and question him and be like, why do you have a copy of this book? And it's like, because I like that book. I don't know. Fuck, what's going on?
You can see how Rainey may share at least some of that ideology. Here's an excerpt from one of her Facebook videos.
And you don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. Not the details. Even if you were there, you don't really know. No one does. You know why? Because the media would never let you know. We are in full and complete communist censorship. The technocracy is out of control. And
wonder where you got those
terms from.
We are
going to do something about it.
The things she is going to do means, first and foremost, getting off Facebook. So Rainey herself doesn't seem like a dangerous threat. But why we're listening to Rainey at all in this special is unclear. Though the rank of captain in the US Army certainly isn't nothing, and her being in the PSYOPs division is interesting, she doesn't actually provide evidence to advance the claim that this was some kind of false flag operation.
Because it makes it
a
spoopy.
A false flag is any time you want to frame another group so that you can then take action against that group.
It's spoopy.
It is my opinion that false flags have happened in this country.
So spoopy.
Look, one of which spoopy may music. Have been January 6th.
This is one of those quotes that sounds scary, but isn't supported by anything. Saying, in her opinion, that false flags have happened in America.
You just described Tucker Carlson's entire show. It sounds scary, but it isn't actually saying anything.
The one may have been January 6th is a Weasley way of making an assertion without providing evidence to back it up. And with the absence of any evidence, we just have her supposed expertise and thinly constructive narrative. A single article published by a New Zealand news outlet is hardly evidence of some America-wide conspiracy. Rainey very carefully crafts another claim.
There is a fear that if you are a conservative and you're in the military, that you will be singled out, that you will be looked at with suspicion, that your clearance may be in question.
Again, no evidence that this is happening is presented, just that there is a fear that it could happen. And then she says,
driving around Fort Bragg, you see NRA stickers, you know, come and take it, Gaston flags, you see all of this. When they started to say that extremists were in the military and that those extremists had an interest in the spirit of 1776, you started seeing really poorly scratched out bumper stickers over all of Fort Bragg.
This is all so fucking hokey. Oh my God. Again, this has been something that, like, it's not, Tucker's not the first one to do this. There's been this idea that, like, the most persecuted class, Dennis Prager says this almost verbatim, the most persecuted class in America now is the conservative. Or Dave Rubin likes to say that too, right? He's like, you know, the only thing that you can't be anymore, I mean, you can be black, you can be gay in America, but you can't be conservative. Conservatives are the ones that we really have to watch out for. As if, like, yeah, wearing a MAGA hat and suddenly I'm a second class citizen. Suddenly I'm being judged for my beliefs, you know, my intrinsic beliefs, the ones that I was born with. You know, I was born with a MAGA hat on my head. It was uncomfortable for my mother.
You are slowly purging out of the military any dissenting voice that may actually stand in the way of using military improperly in the future.
Another quote that military. Effectively means nothing. The military may be used for something nonspecific yet improper, and that these conservative voices would stand against it. What is the it in this case? Rainey doesn't tell us. Also, the evidence of Trump supporters being purged is that they are removing bumper stickers from their cars. Though if their cars are still in the parking lot, it doesn't sound like anyone is being purged. They just feel like they can't have certain bumper stickers on their car. And this section ends with an ominous warning.
Be ready for that day when you are given an unlawful order per the Constitution where you take your rank off and you say, no, to hell with that.
Much like everything Rainey has said, there is effectively nothing here. She believes that something may happen one day that might be very bad, and the soldiers who would resist those orders won't be around anymore. She isn't talking about the droning campaigns, the torture sites, or the genuine crimes committed by the US military.
Wait, is this in your own house? You've got this on your fucking wall? Watch, therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. Jesus, do not come. The fuck? Like, It's really weird to me sometimes when I walk into like hyper Christian households and I've just got like, you know, the bloody Jesus just like right inside. Like as soon as you walk in, like literally drenched in blood, just like right there like that. And you're like, oh, well, that's pretty hardcore. That's some pretty extreme human torture that's going on. But yeah, but like to print stuff on your actual walls, like hopefully you own, you do not rent, and you know, your landlord's not going to be too pleased about this one.
Military. She means something else, and it's left to the mind of the viewer to fill in those blanks with whatever.
That's the Shawshank quote. That is right.
All without providing a shred of evidence as to the how or even what of what that is. This is about creating fear. The second part ends with a shot of a man with a noose around his neck, a trapdoor opening, and his body dropping. This special is designed to scare the crap out of the audience, and as I've demonstrated so far, it's filled with lies and misdirection, intended to make Trump supporters feel as though they're being hunted. And we still have a third part to go through where we expand the circle of those who should be shielded from all criticism or scrutiny to include those who broke into the Capitol building itself. The third part of Patriot Purge goes right for the jugular.
And the left is hunting the right. Hunting the right.
This part of the series once again advances the narrative that the American government is using the tools of the war on terror upon average Americans, something that was already true for Muslim Americans, but still doesn't appear to be true for anyone involved in the January 6th riot. The shots of drones
but
and
it could
torture
happen.
Are meant
and
to
that's
evoke
scary.
What's happening in America today. Let's keep that in mind when we...
You know what's fucked up is, like, shouldn't that all be a lesson? If this is the thing you're, like, so deeply afraid of right now, and that, like, Tucker is really trying to push this idea that, like, if you don't be careful, then they're gonna come for white people. They're gonna label us all as terrorists. It'll suck. We won't be able to travel. We'll be on no-fly lists. People will think we're terrorists everywhere we go. That would be really shitty. And people will make inappropriate jokes all the time. They'll say, like, oh, shit, here comes some white people. Maybe they have bombs in their backpacks or things like that. It would suck. I just don't want that. I don't want to be marginalized in society. I don't like how that would make me feel. And be like, okay, cool. Well, I'm glad you've come to that realization. This is growth. This is wonderful. So this is what you already do, except it's not being done to white people. It's being done to minorities in this country. And I mean, as recently as now. I mean, Lauren Boebert is saying things out loud about this. So maybe we should work to change this, since you realize that this would be kind of a shitty thing to do for something that is, again, not something that anyone can help.
Listen to all of the horrors befalling people who participated in the January 6th riot. The first person we meet advancing this narrative is Richard Barnett.
I'm absolutely a political prisoner. What else could I be? Mm-hmm. My name is Richard Big O Barnett. I live here in Gravette, Arkansas.
As you might notice upon first meeting this self-styled political prisoner is that he is not, in fact, in prison. Richard Barnett spent 3.5 months in jail before being allowed to go back to his home under house arrest before his trial. When Tucker said,
American citizens, some of whom committed no violence whatsoever on January 6th, remain rotting in pretrial detention in one of the worst jails in the country.
I also love how this has made them all realize that, like, the prison industrial complex all the way from the ground on up is fucked up. Like, now all of a sudden we're having Matt Gaetz come out for the first time ever and be like, it is inhumane the way we are treating these prisoners, all right? These January 6th prisoners. Like, apparently, the cells aren't clean. The quality of the food is very poor. And then you're like, yeah, probably. We've been saying this for a very long time. It's not a good system, is it?
Suppose he meant some other hypothetical person that he can't be bothered to tell us about. In fact, the only person we'll be meeting who is currently suffering as a supposed political prisoner in this program is Richard Barnett, who you may recognize as the guy from this famous photo. To be perfectly honest, looking at the footage of Barnett having a good time riding around on his lawnmower, I'm not sure he's suffering the hardships of your average political prisoner. Barnett's lawyer, Joseph McBride, claims that Barnett did not voluntarily enter the Capitol building, but was instead pushed in.
He had no choice! He had no choice!
He's being pushed in.
And that apparently, no one told Barnett to leave.
Some cases, it's not until 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 minutes later that they're even told to leave.
And then Barnett ended up in Nancy Pelosi's office.
He walks in there, the doors had been opened long before. There are two reporters. He's informed of where he's at. He goes, well, how about that? I'll paraphrase. Wow. And then the reporter says, you want to take a picture? Richard says, sure. Have a seat at the desk. He sits down at the desk. The reporter says, don't pose, act natural. Richard sits back and takes a picture, puts his feet up on the desk, and the rest is history.
Poor guy.
To believe his lawyer's account is to assume that Barnett was on the grounds of the Capitol, bypassed a number of barricades while surrounded by people clashing with police, got pulled into the mass of people storming the Capitol building, and then just wandered around until ending up in the Speaker of the House's office, where he was tricked by a reporter into posing.
I mean, he's the lawyer, not me, but I'm pretty sure he's probably going to be told at some point that, like, you know, ignorance of the law does not absolve you of committing crimes. Like, if you're like, oh, I didn't know that it was actually illegal to do what I did, that's not a defense.
At her desk, why Barnett was approaching the Capitol building, why he didn't immediately exit, and why he entered Pelosi's office aren't at all addressed. Perhaps because it would not make him appear, as his lawyer refers to him, as a jokester. Another detail is that Barnett was carrying a stun gun.
Barnett used an inoperable stun gun with the batteries removed as a walking stick.
The stun gun as walking stick point seems pretty thin. No one could have known this weapon didn't have any batteries in it, much in the same way no one would have known a gun doesn't have any bullets in it. Another detail.
Like, what a weird thing to do. Like, oh, I've got a decommissioned rifle. I'm going to turn that into my walking stick. And then, you know, should someone assume that I'm carrying a weapon because it does look like a rifle? Well, I mean, at the end of the day, I'll just explain to them very calmly, oh, that's just my walking stick. Do not worry. Do not fret.
Detail completely left out of the program is that Barnett was also charged with having stolen an envelope with Pelosi's signature on it. And he also left a note for the speaker on a desk that read, Nancy, Bigo was here, you bitch.
Well, okay, to be fair, someone, a reporter most likely, told him to write this, and so he had no choice, because as soon as he was instructed to do so, he wrote this down, and then no one told him that that was a bad thing to do, so.
Bigo is Barnett's nickname. Barnett has capitalized on his brief moment of fame, at first selling signed pictures of himself with his feet on the desk in Speaker Pelosi's office, and then once some fears about copyright came up, signed versions of his own photo with his feet on his own desk. He cool. also has his own website where he's, of course, raising money with links cool. to donate on every single page. Supposedly, these are for his legal bills. The next cool. section is a look at the conditions Barnett and a few others arrested for participating in the January 6th riot faced. McBride explains.
The D.C. facility where January 6ers are being held is Guantanamo Bay for American citizens.
We see multiple shots of torture from Abu Ghraib to set the stage for these.
I was going to say, like, just because you say that it's like Guantanamo Bay, it doesn't make it so. I mean, Guantanamo Bay and what was revealed to be done there is quite literally torture. Everything from sleep deprivation to waterboarding to making people being covered in feces and urine, making them stand in uncomfortable positions for hours, sleep deprivation, food deprivation, psychological torture. Like, it's electrocution. It's fucking, like, it's some of the worst and gnarly things the U.S. military has committed. And I'm not saying the conditions in these prisons are good either. That's not the point of any of this. I mean, now should have been a moment where hopefully conservatives came to, I don't know, the self-realization again that the fact that you are doing this en masse to people, and in some cases, people who don't deserve it. Like, I don't think non-violent drug offenders have any place behind bars in a prison, and there's an overwhelming amount of Black Americans who are in jail for non-violent drug offenses. Maybe this is a problem. Maybe deplorable living conditions. Maybe what could be considered torture, such as, isolation, stuff like that, is a very bad thing that needs reformation. But instead of that, it's just like, this only applies to the patriots who were at January 6th for the they're the only ones that this applies to. Everyone else, fuck them. But for them, this is deplorable. How can we treat Americans like this?
Revelations about the D.C. jail where 40 of those arrested were kept.
Ryan Samsel, two guards snuck into his cell in the middle of the night, zip-tied his hands behind his back. They pulled him out of his cell, took him down to the end where the camera's showing. He followed instructions. They proceeded to beat the man to the point that he now has lost sight in one eye. And when I woke up the next morning, another friend of mine said, hey, Ryan's in trouble. Go down to his cell and check on him. I went down there, got him to turn around, and his whole face looked like hamburger meat.
Samsel, as mentioned earlier in this video, is believed to be the person to violently attack a police officer on January 6th. Assuming Barnett's story is true, there is no justification for any violence that guards are supposedly acting upon him or any other prisoner. It's also a depressing fact about how prisons in the United States operate. A research paper from 2009 revealed that, from a sample of nearly 7,000 inmates, 21% reported being physically assaulted by prison staff within a six-month wow. period. The prison wow. where Barnett was held, the District of Columbia Jail, wow. has well-known reputations for its harsh conditions, with a number of complaints about its deterioration, some even calling for the jail to be replaced. The New York Times, Carl A. Racine, Washington's attorney general, said, "Recent reports about squalid conditions in the district jails are unfortunately not new. Concerns about conditions at the jail received little attention until they were raised by mostly white defendants accused of perpetrating the January 6th insurrection. Of the roughly 1,400 inmates at DC jail, only about 40 were at the Capitol riots. The complaints of other inmates have largely been ignored." Barnett's stories about the horrors of the prison system shouldn't be ignored, but they also shouldn't be considered exceptional. Instead of presenting a systemic critique of American prison systems, though, instead I'll remind you of the framing Tucker Carlson gave us.
"I was physically abused. I've been slammed face first on the concrete."
The experience of Barnett has little to do with the war on terror and more to do with the state of American prisons. By presenting this as a special persecution of Barnett and those like him, it creates a persecution narrative. Again, I'm reminded of the complaints against the justice system that we saw last year and the protests about how it impacted certain communities. As a reminder, here's a comment Tucker Carlson made about those protesters.
"That's not people fighting back against oppression, systemic racism. That's just people destroying things they didn't build. That's people wrecking our civilization. In no normal country would that be allowed. It would be put down immediately with force. That's why we have police. You can't allow that, because if you do allow that, people get killed, as they did."
Though I suppose burning down a Target as a capital offense in Tucker Carlson's mind, as opposed to breaking into the U.S. Capitol in an attempt to overturn the results of a Democratic election. Patriot Purge spends the remaining half of its third part on the story of Ashley Babbitt, the woman who was shot during the Capitol riot. Here's how it introduces this section.
"Federal agencies also decided they could assassinate American citizens they deemed hostile to the regime. At the time, some on the left raised questions about this. Is that a precedent we want to live with, they asked. But they're not asking questions anymore."
This is another attempt to tie the response to the January 6th riot as similar to the war on terror. It also doesn't hold water. There is no reason to believe that Ashley Babbitt was, in any way, specifically targeted until the immediate moments before she was shot while trying to breach a barricade that had been set up in the Capitol building.
Hey, thanks, Visser. Appreciate it.
It also misses the point of how the issue with drone strikes was often they hit unintended targets, including civilians, and were part of a foreign intervention that the left broadly opposed. Someone being shot by a cop policing the Capitol is not the same as a drone dropping a bomb on a specific building in another country. But the targeted assassination rhetoric does far more work to build this persecution narrative, so that's why the language is chosen. The left is, of course, brought up to be vilified.
"Even Antifa took the side of law enforcement. When you're killing the right people, those with power will defend you."
Antifa, well-known fans of the cops, have apparently issued a formal statement on this in the form of some people wearing masks. This section is to establish that not just the government and media should be considered the opposition, but anyone on the left if they don't support the January 6th rioters. By creating this opposition, it isolates the viewer from anyone who doesn't buy into this narrative. And with so much opposition around them, it creates a sense of fear, and the viewer is instead provided a different set of allies, the most aggressive Trump supporters who were present at the riot. While I have sympathy for a mother who lost her daughter or a husband who lost his wife, these sections are particularly vile. The grief of Ashley Babbitt's family does not in any way make her actions justified, and the program deliberately frontloads this section with that grief before we have any details of what those actions were, a humanizing touch that Tucker Carlson would never extend to someone on the left. After several minutes of shots of sad family members, we finally get some idea of what Ashley Babbitt did to inspire so much controversy.
"The majority of the violence at the Capitol started prior to President Trump being done speaking. So my wife was not in that wave of violence."
As you might remember from earlier in this video, there were two waves that arrived at the Capitol building that day. The first wave that openly clashed with police, and then a second wave that arrived after Donald Trump's speech that created a large enough pressure to break the Capitol building itself. Apparently, Ashley Babbitt was part of this second wave.
"There remains no evidence that Ashley Babbitt destroyed property, assaulted another person, or intended to use force of any kind against anyone."
Tucker's language very deliberately obscures what was going on during this particular phase of the riot. Going back to the video from the New York Times, we can see how the mob of people Ashley Babbitt was a part of made their way towards the House chamber, which had only ceased to be in session a few minutes prior. We can see how a makeshift barricade was erected to give the members of Congress time to evacuate the chamber. With the main entrance blocked, part of the mob can be seen breaking away to find an alternative entrance that isn't so fortified. With the politicians visible in the midst of their escape, they start attacking the makeshift barricade. As the barricade is torn down, Babbitt tries to enter, and an officer shoots her. The only footage from these moments leading up to the shooting we see in Patriot Purge that includes Babbitt is this brief shot where she seems bewildered by the chaos around her, as if she were a bystander who just happened to be walking down that hall at the wrong time. Conversely, we can see her several times in the Day of Rage video, clearly participating as a member of the mob, screaming at the politicians. Babbitt's death is framed by her lawyer.
She was unarmed, and she was a protester. And in this country, we don't shoot protesters.
When Babbitt was climbing over that barricade, it wasn't as a person who awkwardly found herself in a strange situation. It was part of this mob that was engaging in violence.
Are you serious? That's how this whole thing is going to be framed? What? Like, yeah, if you're at the point where she's, like, literally smashing the windows and trying to crawl in while a cop at gunpoint is like, do not enter, I have a gun pointed at you. You're not, like, you're not a peaceful protester on the outside.
This is a very selective recount of what happened in those moments, and Babbitt can very clearly be seen participating.
And by the way, this whole thing, it's such a juxtaposition versus what was happening to, again, Antifa protesters, Black Lives Matter protesters, the 10,000 people across the United States who were arrested. Fucking, they were shooting canisters at press, at fucking medics. Like, does anyone remember how gnarly shit was getting at the height of those, like, daily Trump protests where fucking people were, like, you would see, like, even major news outlets like CNN, one of the reporters got something like fired at them. Like, they were just they were begging people up. Like, they were actually just coming out unmarked. Like, they didn't have tags, numbers, anything. They would just come out of vans, beg people up, put them into vans. And people like Andy Ngo and Tim Pool were like, oh well, you know, this is just what happens. I mean, it's kind of cool when the people are like begging the enemy and stuff like that. Like, holy shit.
Part of the mob. While her death is certainly nothing to celebrate, it also strikes me as odd as to how she is instead framed as some kind of peaceful protester as worthy of sympathy
when Omar was arrested,
as those who
no
didn't
shit.
Enter the Capitol at all. We see scenes of Babbitt dying in the program, and I certainly won't be showing those here, because there's something grotesque about all of this. Had Babbitt been arrested instead of being shot, I sincerely doubt that anyone would be extending her any sympathy. She would probably have been disavowed like the people who were standing next to her. For example, the man next to her, Zachary Alum, was happily labeled as an agitator in the program, and has not extended any sympathy. Though if he had been shot, he likely would have been rechristened as a martyr as well.
And that's where Zachary Alum came in. He was the agitator in this situation.
Babbitt's death is unfortunate. She's a young woman who was misled by right-wing outlets such as Tucker Carlson, and because of that, her life ended. It's also unfortunate that her death has become a tool for those same propagandists to perpetuate the myth that Trump supporters are being hunted like terrorists. As Patriot Purge wraps up, we get a chilling monologue from Carlson.
Tyranny doesn't extinguish extremism. Tyranny creates extremism. They're pushing you toward violence, and they're doing it on purpose.
We need to go into the Capitol!
But don't fall for it.
And it all comes full circle. The whole time we were told that the people at the January 6th riot were innocent people, victims of an FBI plot, or not even Trump supporters to begin with. And now Carlson is telling us that the violence is only natural in response to a made-up war on Trump supporters. He ends with a vague recommendation.
Be the light. That's how it gets
better. I don't know what that means. Although it is a useful way for Tucker to absolve himself from stoking violence by getting as close to that line as possible, claiming that this fabricated story of
Leftists push people to try and kidnap Whitmer. I guess you missed the first half of this video. So Tucker Carlson proposes a new conspiracy theory in which FBI informants were the ones who kidnapped Whitmer. He lies. He says that a number of the people who were arrested, who were members of that, I forget what they're called, the Wolverine Squad, they were one of those like patriot groups, says that they were actually FBI informants. And it was specifically one of them who became an FBI informant after being arrested. So that's someone who flipped, which, yeah, those are two very, very different stories.
Persecution Wolverine justifies Watchmen, a violent you. Response, but instead of that, people should be the light. It's not meant to inspire people to better behavior. It's a way of creating plausible deniability for his role in events such as these. There are a few major takeaways I had from Patriot Purge. Tucker Carlson described this three-part series as an investigation as to what really happened on January 6th. As I've hopefully made clear, the factual errors are a huge problem. The more common are lies by omission. This is a common tactic among propaganda.
Oh, right, joined the wrong channel to troll. Sorry for both. No problem. Happy trolling. May you find the channel that you're looking to attack. Oh, and this is great. Look at this. Da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da. Ah, yes. Now the world will appreciate him as I do. Beautiful. Pristine. Well, are we taking a break between Christmas and New Year's and having some downtime with your loved ones? I'll definitely probably have a day or two, but no, I usually try to stream through the holidays because I know a lot of people might not even have things like families of their own to go to, so it's nice to have some streamer communities to watch and also cocoa, hot chocolate, other stuff. Christmas fucking sucks. I'm not a fan. In fact, instead of Christmas this year, I'm going to do Halloween 2. That's what I'm going to do. We're going to do Halloween 2, and we'll probably watch a spoopy movie. Maybe I'll see if I can get Scaredy Cats and Mildred involved, and it'll be a whole thing. We already have the aesthetic. Look at this place. In fact, I can add to it. Here, pumpkins. Look at this. Pumpkins and whatever that. Look at this horrible, horrifying monster you see before you. If you're not careful, children, this creature will come to life and haunt you in your dreams.
Propagandists, choosing to omit a fact or facts to create a misconception. For example, when Tucker presents someone being supposedly charged for standing in the wrong place. When the charge is more fully understood, we're standing in a restricted area with a firearm and badge while not on duty, and then lying to law enforcement about why you were there. This is obviously not journalism, but instead a deliberate propaganda effort to whitewash the actions of certain Trump supporters on January 6th.
Killer Tomatoes, I've seen
this
it, it's isn't
great. Because Tucker is a man of the people, though. Throughout this three-part special, Tucker Carlson constructs a fact-free narrative that serves a number of different groups. Here's an interesting
narrative.
Bit of video from May of 2021 of Representative Paul Gosar defending the January 6th rioters. I'm going to intercut it with parts of the Patriot Purge special it reminded me of.
Outright propaganda and lies are being used to unleash the national security state against law-abiding U.S. citizens, especially Trump voters.
Ungloved hands that tortured and killed suspected foreign terrorists have been unshackled on behalf of a political party here at home. Suddenly, the United States of America has political prisoners.
It was reported early, totally unconfirmed, that an armed insurrection, quote, beat a police officer to death with a fire extinguisher.
Bludgeoned with a fire extinguisher.
There's just one problem with this story. It never happened.
Oh. Federal prosecutor Michael Sherwin on CBS News 60 Minutes continued the, quote, shock and awe, end of quote, strategy.
Described it as a shock and awe campaign.
Who executed Ashley Babbitt?
And what seemed to be execute her.
In the roughly 5 months since Representative Gosar's statements, the supposed investigation by Tucker Carlson and his team reinforced the exact same narratives, one built on distortions and omissions. Patriot Purge is an attempt to maintain faulty narratives that have been pushed by politicians such as Gosar. In this way, Tucker Carlson reveals himself to be a mouthpiece for the Republican Party. That would explain why he didn't mention that supposed journalist Darren Beatty worked for the Trump administration, or that Ali Alexander had a long history working for the Republican Party. It's also worth noting that Alexander claimed that Gosar helped organize the Stop the Steal rally, though Gosar has denied those claims. Also notable is how many of these people have websites with stores, fundraising pages, or other means of asking for money from Tucker Carlson's sizable audience. It isn't just that these are political operatives creating a piece of propaganda, it's also a grift to get as much money as they can out of this audience, under the guise of fighting against a non-existent conspiracy.
Oh,
also
yeah.
Egregious is how Tucker Carlson uses talking points.
Oh shit, thank you for the raid, Antifada. Welcome in, raiders. We are just in the middle of finishing Jose's really, really good new video called Tucker Carlson's Patriot Purge Rewrites History, about how Tucker Carlson is now spreading a conspiracy theory that the January 6th insurrection was a deep FBI plot in order to gaslight and trick conservatives and turn white people into the new terrorists in America, which sounds perhaps a bit batshit on its surface. It's far more batshit when you see how it all plays out. It's certainly pretty wild. But everyone, can you go give twitch.tv/theantifada a follow back? Thank you very much for the raid, raiders, and keep up the good podcasting.
From the left, specifically those regarding the war on terror, many of those which have been mitigated over time, by the way. Tucker Carlson appropriates these talking points to an entirely different situation, while then turning around to make the left appear to be the villains in this whole story.
At the time, some on the left raised questions about this. Is that a precedent we want to live with, they asked. But they're not asking questions anymore.
What Tucker Carlson would rather not address is how the treatment of some of these people at the Capitol on January 6, such as the aggressive questioning of the Hooper couple, or the violence at the DC prison where some protesters have been held, have long been complaints from the left. It's not that Tucker Carlson thinks any of these things are bad, as evidenced by his atrocious talking points directed towards BLM protesters. It's that he doesn't like that these things are being used on certain people. He would use the term legacy Americans. Most other people would just say,
"Hey Lance, Big Money Salvia was test streaming the other night. You should touch base with him and give him tips. I name dropped you in the chat." And he said, "We've talked." I mean, I would love that to be true. I've never had a conversation with Big Money Salvia, but I'm ready for my first one. I think he's fucking hilarious. I'll reach out to him again. He followed me on Twitter. I DM'd him once saying, just like, "Hey, love your show. If you ever want to do an interview, come on." But he never responded. That was the extent of our communication so far. But I'll try it. I'll try again.
Say white Americans. There's a lot of talk about how the left should be making more overtures to convince those on the right of our ideas, that we should compromise or soften our rhetoric to find common ground. What makes it difficult isn't that the left isn't nice enough, it's that people such as Tucker Carlson will obscure when a common cause can be found. By preventing the realization among some Americans that the justice system can be unnecessarily harsh, and replacing that realization with a conspiracy that only Trump supporters face this kind of treatment, Carlson reveals that the only group he's serving are the powerful who have more to gain by keeping enough of the population ignorant of systemic problems that impact everyone. And perhaps worst of all, and something dripping from the subtext of this special, is how Tucker Carlson is deeply committed to bringing the worst elements of American society into the mainstream. There was an interesting observation I read in an opinion piece by Nicole Hammer where she brought up how the narrative within Patriot Purge has echoes of the Charlottesville rally and the glorification of Kyle Rittenhouse. I think it's very important that we now remember the infamous line from former President Trump when describing the Charlottesville rally, saying,
"And you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally, but you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay? And the press has treated them absolutely unfairly."
The right has been quick to defend this, saying that Trump's statements made it clear he wasn't calling the white nationalists very fine people, but rather the non-white nationalists who were demonstrating alongside them to preserve a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. This is perhaps the most dangerous thing that's happening here, because while it's perfectly fine to say that not everyone at that particular rally was a white nationalist, they were, at the very least, comfortable with demonstrating alongside those white nationalists. One of the dangers of Patriot Purge is how it makes almost...
Okay, so someone in Twitch chat called Douchebag Milkshake has been saying, let's see, "To be fair, you're very much uncoverable. You should be talking about how to get together after this very soon. Can I show you my new shotgun? Let's go meet up." I am going to accuse you of being Fetty, my friend, because you're asking for people to meet up and commit acts of violence. That's pretty yikesy, gonna say. Just gonna have to time you out in the ban zone and then figure out what you're gonna do from there. But good luck recruiting in someone else's chat.
Invisible the presence of groups such as the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers, letting them blend into the crowd of regular Trump supporters. The Hoopers are evidence enough that, mistaken as they might be, not all Trump supporters were trying to overthrow the Capitol building that day. But the special wants them to be comfortable with letting others do it, and maybe even call them allies. In other words, if someone's mom or dad is at one of those rallies, making silly signs and protesting something that didn't happen, they should welcome alongside them violent militia members who are looking to kill their political opposition. The purpose of this video is to make the average Trump supporter more comfortable with open fascism. While researching this video, a massive investigation by the Washington Post provided a lot of valuable information. I want to share the final few sentences that I think echo a growing concern, and in light of the contents of Patriot Purge, I think I've identified at least one source that's creating this growing dynamic. That day in Phoenix, more than 100 Trump supporters gathered on the lawn of the state capitol to protest the prosecution of the January 6th rioters. A knot of people dressed in the Proud Boys' signature black and yellow garb drew a shout-out from a GOP House lawmaker as he addressed the rally. Out in the crowd, the demonstrators echoed Trump over and over again. "The January 6th rioters were patriots," some said. "The system is rigged. Those in power are corrupt. The country is crumbling, and elections can no longer be trusted to fix it." It was also familiar. A year earlier, Trump supporters had voiced these same angry sentiments in the run-up to Election Day. Everything that had transpired since, the false claims about the vote, the president's attempt to subvert the results, a violent assault on a branch of government, had only deepened the conviction of some of those gathered on the lawn that day. To them, the options were dwindling. "Short of bloodshed, I don't know of any way to fix what we currently have going on," said Wade Dams, a 47-year-old from Snowflake, Arizona, who works in construction. "I take part in it," he continued. "I just need someone else to be the leader." Tucker Carlson could be that guy. This video could not have been completed without a lot of hard work.
Everybody, please, here's the link. Go give Jose a follow, a sub, if you haven't already. Oh, wait, no, I don't have the link. I lie! Do that thing where you give a thumbs up, and then you say something this good. Maybe do better than I did. I mean, my comment's nothing to write home about, but this good is just the starting. It's the first draft. I'll write a better one. Jose is great, though. Jose is fantastic. Yeah, I guess Tucker Carlson basically went to the school of fucking Lauren Southern for this one, it really sounds like, as in, like, just make it flashy, you know, sensationalist, get people as scared as possible, include a few interviews with key people to push a false narrative, manipulate information, strategically leave facts out while reporting on it in order to, again, push a conspiracy theory narrative, and wrap the whole thing up in this strange, bizarre, like, fear-mongery call to arms that at this moment in history, the true persecuted class in America happened to be right-wing white Trump supporters, and anyone else who is not a part of that is going to be caught up in the fray and then turned into... I guess someone who's capable of being locked up for a long time under these new terrorism laws. Yeah, but really good debunking by Jose. It takes a very long time to do the amount of research that Jose put into this to get the true story put together. Jose is indeed bomb. Very, very bomb. That is also true. So you've just been listening to an episode of The Surf Times, and if you enjoy it and want to see The Surf Times, you can go to wearesurfs.com or watch the live shows at thesurfs.tv. And also everywhere social media is sold, basically thesurfs.tv, you'll find us there, twitter.com/thesurfstv, for example. It would also help us out tremendously if you could leave a good review of this podcast if you enjoyed it, either on, I don't know, iTunes or wherever you're podcasting. Apparently it does help, and yeah, we hope to see you soon.
To our gods, Xander Corvus and Peyton L. Just, we beseech thee to smite down our enemies. To our monarch, Tom Spiker, we are but your humble court jesters, here to amuse you. To our lords, Trevor R., we give thanks for this spit of land for us to eke out this meager existence. To our knights, Merid, Cheryl Alvarez, Ruby Kelly, Ellie Leslie, Alex P., Brandon, Words Greenwood, Nate, that one guy, Hagbird Celine, Matthew Scarborough, Stellar Vision, Ariane McCarthy, Daniel Sutton, Coulter Smith, Val 9000, Jenna Tall, Quiet 185, Anna Loves Riley, Omni, Riley and Anna, Poodle Hawk, The Tim Caucus, Multi Mondi, Trevor Yanis, Lemmy 101, Anthropophojack, Cern 42, Catherine, Radical Maniac, Ramon Acosta, Nkosin, Violent Orchard, Sophie Baby, Political Puppy, Andreas Chiringuito, Zach Christensen, Josh Mickelson, Todd Buckingham, and Todd Lajeunesse. We raise our flag in a veil, and we salute you, our friends.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.